Hello and welcome to Between Two Cairns. I'm Yochai.
Hi, I'm Brad.
And I'm Quinns.
And today...
Hi, Quinns.
Oh.
Hi, Brad. Yochai, do you mind? Me and Brad were having a moment there.
It's really my fault because we're so inconsistent about whether I then go hello.
Hold on, yes. Yochai. Hey, Yochai, real quick. Hold on. Hey, man. Hey, Quinns, how's it going, man?
Hey, what's up? Yeah, no, it's going well.
This is cool.
How's the partner of a gender that I don't know, because I don't know you very well, or even if you're single? I've ruined
it. It's a mystery.
I've ruined the bit that we were doing.
I think you successfully intuited that I'm a hardcore wife guy, and let me tell you, she's great, man. Thanks for checking in.
Oh, sick. Yeah, no, that's good. Love to hear that about my...
How's your whole situation domestically?
I'm getting divorced. That's not a joke.
Oh my God.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. Let's go. I'm here to talk about an adventure, a dungeon.
Yeah.
Please, Yochai, do not remove that from the edit. That shit is hilarious.
Hey, man.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry to pry, man. You know?
You know what? You were just a bro checking in, I appreciate
that. Okay.
At the end of the day, aren't we all bros checking in, right?
No,
Okay, this is already getting out of hand. Let me just do some basic introductions to our audience. I don't think you need it based on both your name and voice, but I'm going to do it anyways. Today we are graced with the presence of Quinns, who some of you might know from his recently launched YouTube channel, Quinns Quest, but I'm going to take minor guess to assume most of our listeners will know you from Shut Up and Sit Down, which is a long-standing, extremely popular YouTube channel, website, podcast, etc. We're actually big fans, both of your work there. And I think, I can't speak for Brad, but I actually used to read you on Rock, Paper, Shotgun, like,
Don't forget,
people make games, man. Well, people make games.
And people make games. And that's right. And you also have cool little documentaries on People Make Games, which I really love personally. I don't think it's well known enough. And I apologize for omitting that. I just meant most people would know you from Shut Up and Sit Down. Can I just say something, though? So you were a video games writer for RPS a long time ago, like 2010s, early 2010s. And I remember, that they had that cardboard children.
Rab Florence's column.
Right.
That I sometimes
would do that under not cardboard children or something. Anyhow, you had this piece on Descent 2E, the second edition of Descent, Journeys into the Dark, whatever it is. Anyhow, that got me back into gaming. That article. Okay, so let me explain. I was a huge HeroQuest fan as a kid, and I also played role-playing games in high school, but then I stopped, like many people, and then I slowly started coming back into board gaming and then eventually role-playing games, and my process through which I did that started with Descent, Journeys to the Dark, Into the Dark, whatever it's called. I actually owned every expansion at the time, and yet I've completely forgotten about it because when I discovered the kind of indie role-playing scene, this is no joke, I gave away all of my Descent stuff. All of it. I gave it away to a guy who lives in Texas that I'm forgetting the name of, David something. Anyways,
cares about that?
But the point is, well, he hosts another podcast, a story games related podcast. It doesn't matter. The point is...
Oh, so he probably also gave away the Descent stuff.
He maybe... No, he liked both. Anyhow... I do remember reading that piece going, this has rekindled my interest in HeroQuest, which brought me to Descent, which brought me into board gaming again, and then again into role-playing games. So I kind of have you to thank for that, is what I'm trying to say in a very roundabout way.
Wow. So before that, you were a well-adjusted individual. Yeah, yeah. You were going on hikes. You were cooking meals.
I still go on hikes, but I do appreciate the work that you do. And everyone there, who has come on and off your various... enterprises over the years.
I'm flattered, but honestly, I feel like it's so peculiar for you to say that you know, because I was excited to come on Between Two Cairns because, like, this is one of the podcasts that I listen to because I've just launched Quinns Quest now, which is, you know, I've covered video games, I've covered board games, and now, you know, where my passion is role-playing games. And So I was excited to come on this podcast because I've been listening to it to learn more about the scene, you know, because not because it's not like I'm not, you know, running multiple campaigns, you know, a week. It's that the scene is just so big. It's so right, big. So right, the idea yeah. that I have accidentally seeded this podcast in one way or another that is then feeding me later is like some kind of fable. And I think that's
it's nice. a disgusting Ouroboros.
Speaking of disgusting Ouroboros,
oh yeah, speaking
the game were
this is yeah. So let's just wait. We will get to Silent Titans. My goodness, I can't even imagine. Before we do, Brad did have a question for you, but before I let that happen, I want to say one more thing. I really appreciate the random forays into role playing that Shut Up and Sit Down has done over the years, like Alice is Missing and what was the other one? I remember
Spire.
Yeah, you that was yours. That was yours, right? Yeah, you got real.
Yeah, and we did some text reviews back on the side before. I've always been trying to get role playing correspondence off the ground, and you know what was funny is that I kind of knew it was time to start Quinn's Quest when the role playing content on Shut Up and Sit Down, traditionally a board game site, started to do really well, and then I was like, this scene has grown to the point.
Yeah,
maybe it can sustain something outside the.
And now you're in the scene. You're hardcore in the
true.
Scene.
It's true.
You're hanging out with a couple hardcore scene kids. Me and Yukai, we're in the stinky, dirty game clubs. We're hardcore game clubs kids.
What?
And this is it. You're stinking it up with the two scene guys.
Can you stop using olfactory term? You always use gross terms. You know that? That's like a thing that you do.
So,
yeah,
man.
You do.
I don't think that's
you say
true.
You do. Anyhow.
I don't think I'm afraid to get real. And I don't know what that says about you, man, but I think you should turn your video on and look into your eyes for some for some deeper truths. All right.
As a man going through a divorce, I appreciate this level of tenderness and honesty, Brad. This is just helping me out.
Great. We're here for you. This is the kind of like hardcore healing that this show is all about, you know?
Yeah. I thought it was about OSR sort of modules.
No.
Okay,
common misconception.
Wow.
I sent your review of Lancer on Quinn's Quest over to Brad here, who said, "I don't want to watch this, it will just make me buy it."
I watched it and it was great. No, but it did make me want to buy it, and I was a little pissed off about that.
Yeah, okay. Aren't you a little bit? I feel like your channel focuses on sort of highlighting non-standard, non-D&D, as you say, squint and it might be D&D or whatever, non-D&D kind of content, which I think is fantastic. Don't get me wrong. What I want to know is, do you see yourself now as, you know, you're taking what I would say is a really big audience and turning their eyes towards independent role-playing games. And I think Lancer is probably one of the bigger versions of that. You're not showing them Pathfinder or whatever. Do you feel a sense of like responsibility with that? I don't mean to say to stroke your ego and say you've got all these people on your, you know, that you're showing videos to, but like, let's be real. Your channel has been open for like 3 weeks and it has almost 40,000 subscribers. Do you feel like you have a sense of responsibility? Like, here's what I'm going to show them next and maybe highlight this unknown product. Or does that not even come into your brain patterns?
No, for sure it is stressful. For sure it's really worrying. You know, when I started Shut Up and Sit Down, it was just like, I want to tell a few people about board games. And then, you know, if a video got 10,000 views, that was really exciting. But now it does feel like this like retail commercial eye of Sauron that I can point in any direction. And, you know, it's not so much like I've been writing about games for a living for like 20 years. I'm not worried about, you know, a game being good. I know when a game is good. Even, you know, my problem really right now with Quinn's Quest is that I don't think the games I'm looking at are small enough for me to be truly happy, because I've got to hit a lot of, you know, like wins. First of all, you know, like Wild Sea had, you know, like what, something crazy, like 40 people working on it. You know, Lancer, yeah, you can buy it on itch.io, but it's one of the most popular games on itch.io. And in the long term, I would like to be, you know, helping people to find games that are, you know, a little smaller, not already successfully published products. But yeah, I'm not concerned about pointing people towards a good game. What I'm concerned about is all the little bitty things I say along the way, you know, because compared to your average human being, I know so much about RPGs that they would probably think I should be locked away. But compared to, you know, people like yourselves, all I'm aware of is the depths of my ignorance. And I don't know, in that Lancer video you're talking about, you know, in trying to make a point about how I like Lancer, that it apes the structure of D&D 4th edition. You know, it's big tactical grid combat. And I like that it's trying to be something similar to D&D while not essentially being fantasy. But in saying that, you know, I poked fun at some games which fall into the remit of the OSR. And I got some really angry comments of people saying, like, you're like, you know, the OSR is not anything even remotely like D&D. To which, you know, the catty response I wanted to make was like, okay, but what's it the old school of that we're referring to?
Can I just speak on that for a second? So first off, welcome to the OSR. Second, a number of people sent me screenshots because you threw Cairn up there at one point, which is my game. And I completely agree with you. It's supposed to be D&D.
Thank you.
Like the whole freaking point of Cairn was, I don't like the math. Here's a simpler version of it to run D&D. That is the point. So I even have a section on the Cairn website for converting from 5th edition, as well as, you know, all the older systems. So I am here to say, squint at Cairn, and I hope to, you know, to the creator that it is D&D. That's the point of the thing. It's a folk D&D. So right there with you.
You have genuinely just said the thing that will make me, after this recording this podcast, stand up and walk away from my desk feeling 2 inches taller.
Go ahead.
It's just when you ask about whether I'm stressed, it's like, I'm still reeling from how deeply needed that compliment was. Thank you so much, guys.
It's not even a compliment. It's just accurate. That's what it's supposed to be.
Well, I thought so, but the stressful thing about launching Quinn's Quest is when I make a comment on Shut Up and Sit Down after, like, you know, 12 years of reviewing board games, I know that I'm right or wrong. Whereas with RPGs, I currently only think I'm right.
Oh,
So that means when the commenters come for me, I don't have the suit of armor of being like, no, shut up, though.
I'm like, I mean,
are they right?
I'll give you, I'm not sure if this applies. I'm sure that I have no idea if this applies to board games, but in the role-playing world, I don't think there is such a thing as right. I think it's a lot like philosophy, where you sort of are alone in a room and no new information is presented, but yet you're building entire philosophies based on the same white wall everyone is looking at. You know, I don't think you'll ever feel that. All you can really say is, this is what works for me. You know, this is what makes sense to me. And to me, that's just as justified or valid as anyone else's perspective. And I'm not trying to be a descriptivist about it. It's just, art role playing is storytelling, and that means something different to everybody. In this one case, though, you're right. So
we can't know anything, but in this one case, you know that I, Quinns, am objectively correct. No, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. That's very kind.
Well, I also appreciate your slow descent into like a Garth Marenghi style personality on that show. It really does make me.
Hell yes.
I used to watch Dark Place, like pirated it when I was in my early 20s, and I had a British.
That's probably the ideal format to 100%. Watch it.
There was no other way. I had a British roommate, and he had introduced it to me, but there's no way to watch it. So of course I got it that way, and that it will forever. You know, it's a formative. I guess kind of approach that I don't see aped very much. So even if you're not trying, I think it really works. And I love the kind of, I mean, you have some really impressive music and editing on I mean, you've always had good, well, in the last couple of years, you've always had really good editing and music, but I'm really impressed with Quinn's Quest overall in that respect. So there's another, I guess, compliment there. That said, I do want to give Brad a chance to ask you a question he had come up with. So Brad,
I know it's a very awkward transition into like, okay, you let Brad talk now. You know,
well, I crawl out of
my little Brad
okay.
hole.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I talk.
Hey, Quinn.
It's how you work with talking too much. It's I say here I'm officially not talking now. Sorry, I'll stop.
Yeah,
Brad, climb out of your hole, climb onto my lap, and ask me the question.
thanks, Mister.
up you come.
Oh, God,
what a comfy lap this is. Yeah, this is me getting comfy in your lap.
I could tell.
This is called role playing. This is kind of a little thing we do here. It's just a little fun little thing.
Okay.
Well, yeah, man. Well, you know, we're talking about what to review, and you said maybe this is too much information to reveal, but you said you're not a hardcore dungeon guy. Would you say that's true? You're not a hardcore dungeon head?
I think that, oh, wow. You know, I have, God damn it. You have, what you've done is climbed into my lap there and you have poked your tiny little child's finger right in like the gap between my ribs. Because even reading, I have to close this book, even reading Silent Titans, it caused me to think a lot about dungeons and... Yeah. You've kind of, you're forcing me to do one of my takeaways that I was going to save for later in this podcast. But what I find really peculiar reading books like Silent Titans is the unbelievable, obvious, like almost inconceivable amount of imagination that is contained in a book like this.
Yeah.
It's squeezed out into the incredibly restrictive format of a dungeon. I the closest I will get to running a dungeon is like, you know, I messed with, Dungeon Crawl Classics for a second there.
Sure, yeah.
You know, I really like the design of Mothership modules, which are kind of dungeons, but in sci-fi, so it doesn't feel that way. But by and large, like, dungeons are probably the thing about role-playing that interests me the least.
Interesting. Yeah. But, you know, a module isn't always just a dungeon. You know, I know in the Quinn's Quest opening, I see you holding that, what is it?
Impossible
Landscapes. Yep.
Yeah. I'm running that right now.
Ooh.
Not right now. I'm on a podcast right now.
I don't know. I was just curious about your relationship with like modules. I mean, we are a very module focused podcast. We review the dungeons. You know, I feel like at the end of the day, we're both kind of reviewing these kind of curated experiences, but we're kind of looking maybe at the micro more, and you're looking at the macro, like the games, the spirit, and the system here. Yes, I just wanted to know, like, what's your relationship with modules? Is that, how does that fit in Quinn's Quest and in
modules,
how your critical lens?
Modules, very different question. Yeah. I love modules. Uh-huh. I love campaign settings. I find that, especially when I'm reviewing stuff, I find that running a really good module for that is more exciting to me and more helpful in terms of doing a review than designing something myself.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Impossible Landscapes there, or I just mentioned Mothership. I am so delighted to have really good modules available for those games because they help, I think, cement me more in the world, in the rules, in the setting, in the vibe, in the idea space of that game.
Yeah.
Than if I was to invent something myself. Like if I have never run Delta Green and then design a Delta Green module of my very own and then it's not very good. Like, have I reviewed that game? Obviously I have, but like, I mean, in as much as, I mean, Yahai is right, that like also everything is unknown and that we're all in philosophical, like anti-space, and nothing can be known. And my head is imploding in on itself right now. Modules good. Modules great. Love modules.
Modules good. Yeah.
Modules good.
Yeah.
Big modules. Really good.
Whoa.
I like big modules.
You heard it here, folks. Big modules, good.
I was talking on my Patreon post for Quinn's Quest that how much I like big modules and how I have no interest in Traveler, but I would run Pirates of Drynax in a heartbeat. All that, like, yeah, really not long, but wide modules. It's why I'm playing Impossible Landscape.
Like expansive.
You just can't keep me
like
away.
Like expansive.
From. Expansive, yeah. And like ultimately... Overambitious,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
A module that comes in a hardback book and isn't finished because finishing it is impossible.
Yeah,
and so a module that inspires, right. And this is the case with Impossible Landscapes, like loyalty from the audience who will get together in a Discord channel and be like, we all want to run this, but it's kind of unrunnable. So let's like glue the holes in the module closed together so we can all run it.
I mean, that's kind of a beautiful thing, though. I think that that's a legitimate.
I agree.
Like, there's this idea of completeness and. And Brad was sort of mentioning, you know, how modules are curated experiences. I agree that they don't have to be. And that's why I like settings. And I will read settings and then just pick and choose what I want. And I want to also argue for something else. I have less of an affinity for dungeons than Brad does. I do like them. And I do enjoy what they do for the kind of play experience that I care about, which is problem solving and, you know, emergent narrative and all that stuff. I do think dungeons help kind of facilitate that play, but my preference is overland adventures, sort of in a wild sandbox setting, without necessarily turning everything into a freaking dungeon. There's this mentality in the old school space that's dungeons good, everything else not good or not as good. And
well,
I don't agree.
That's how I feel about Silent Titans, is like, it's so, not to keep bringing it back, but it's so unhinged.
Yes, yes.
And then also it has these five really specific little series of rooms that you go in and have this like really...
I feel like I'm alone in the dungeon all of a sudden. Here's Mr. Dungeon. He's all alone. He's looking for his friends.
It's not that I don't like dungeons. It's that if you hide like settings or like, you know, locations, I like situations.
Yeah.
And a situation can be a dungeon. Yeah. A situation can be an overland crawl. But what I like is like a complicated sort of piece of clockwork where, I don't know, like, and, you know, there are certainly elements of Silent Titans that are like that. But if you're talking about, but the elements of Silent Titans or the, of modules or dungeons in general that disinterest me are like, you know, what's in this room? And it's like 2D4 apes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that I agree with. And I think that's kind of part of the show is trying to find dungeons that don't do that. And there are just so many of that it's sometimes not even worth mentioning. Oh, well, this room is boring because they all have those rooms. But I do agree that making a dungeon interesting, I think, is the challenge when you're doing this kind of play experience. And there is value to it. And I mean, we'll get to this with Silent Titans, but there is a sort of a deconstruction of that form, and it's worthy of discussion. So before we do that, I just want to, Brad, you had another question. Did you want to ask that or do you not want to?
Impossible Landscapes. That's a book I've picked up a number of times because it looks really cool and it's something I'm interested in. But the thing I keep coming back to is my friends would hate this.
Why do you think they would hate
it? They don't want to be psychologically tortured.
So, you know,
yeah. I mean. So, That's something I think about because I read a lot of RPGs, I read a lot of modules, and a lot of times, like Silent Titans, I sometimes come to, this is sick. My friends would attack me with sticks if I tried to run this for them.
The equivalent I have for that is in Pirates of Drynax, it is such a module where at least one person needs to own the group spreadsheet of your ingoing and outgoing expenses of like, you know, fuel cells and salaries. And
right.
Stuff. But everybody has to care if you figure out a way to get 5% off your outgoing expenses. And that's that's the kind of psychological torture that I only have one friend who would be willing to do that. But all my friends would be willing to do, you know, like slowly losing their grip on reality and all their loved ones. So
how does that paint your reviews? Because you're going through a lot of different systems. You're going through a lot of different games. How much of it is like, do I have the right friends for this?
Yeah.
Like, this is a great game, but it failed because my friends are idiots. You know, like, how much of it is friends?
No, dude, this was the thing I did my first blog post about on the Patreon, which is like, I can't, because the rod I've made for my back on Coin's Quest is I will play, you know, 3, 5, 7, 10 sessions of any game before I review it. And that has been really fruitful. Yeah. And it has called, I feel differently about every game for having played it rather than having read it. But also you can totally review RPGs without playing them. I'm not saying you have to do that, just how I'm doing it. But players are a huge thing. Like, really want to review, for example, Good Society, the Jane Austen Regency.
Oh, sure,
Scandal, rumors, heartbreak, someone marrying someone else for money and everyone being sad about it. But I have two concurrent play groups and there are exactly two players from each who want to play Good Society. So I'm like, great. So we just pair them together. But then I end up looking at the four remaining players and it's like, oh, what are you bunch of losers want to do? And they say, oh, actually, you all like David Lynch. Okay, we can play Public Access. But yeah, what I don't have currently, and which is helpful because, or aligns with the goal of like, I'm not currently interested in D&D or trad fantasy or dungeon crawling or 2D4 apes. Currently, I can feel like, dude, I was reading Dolmenwood this week being like, what if I did have 2D4 fungus apes then? And so like the more time I spend away from trad fantasy, I know eventually in however many months or years, I am going to review something like, but not necessarily Dolmenwood. Now
it wouldn't be a bad thing. It's good.
It wouldn't be a bad thing. It's cool. It's great. Like the playable species that's like the little bat faced arsonist.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yep.
It's so here for it. I don't know. Currently, the thing that my players will play anything right now except for truly traditional D&D because it's what they all came up role playing through. And it's the one thing they don't want to go back to.
Sure.
Not necessarily because they had a bad time, but because they've done it.
Right.
And I'm showing them, you know, I'm taking them by the hand and showing them all kinds of messed up, weird games that they didn't know existed.
Yes.
And they're not keen to go back to dungeons, basically.
Right. Yeah.
Well, speaking of messed up, weird games, let's talk about our main review, Silent
Actually, Yochai, I think it's time for a recurring segment that we like to do here. It's a little game we like to play here. Yochai, I thought, let's do a round of So Hot or So Not. It's the hottest game from Between Two Cairns. We ask a series of prompts to our guests, and we ask them, is this so hot or
what?
So not?
What?
Rules
what?
Of the game, Quinn. We're going to ask you stuff.
What are you talking
if you think
about?
It's so hot, you say so what? Hot. If you don't think it's hot, you say so not. All right, are you ready to play, Quinn?
I have never been so ready. This is very much my hot ones.
All right, are you ready to play, Yochai?
I don't know what this is.
Let's play so hot or okay. So not.
Is it going to just be the Titans from Silent Titans? Because I can divide them into okay. whether they're hot or not. I really like two of the five of them.
Okay. Yes.
We'll save it for the deep dive. And away we go. No, okay. Here we go with number one, playing role-playing games, parentheses, with friends. So hot or so not, Quinns?
So hot.
So hot. So hot. What about rolling the humble D12? You like rolling D12s?
So hot.
Oh, so hot. So hot. Quinns, question for you. What about doing a little silly voice for your character?
Oh, so hot.
So hot. So hot. What about Cthulhu? What about Cthulhu, Quinns?
It's going to be a so not for me, Brad.
Oh, that's a spicy one. That's a spicy meatball for the Twitter, the Twitter hot take, folks.
Okay.
You like that, Twitter folks? We got a spicy meatball for you. Quinns, what about getting really silly with the fellas? You like that? Is that so hot or so not?
That's pretty hot. I'm not entirely sure where this is going.
What is happening?
I'm on the ride for now.
I don't understand. Can we stop?
Quinns,
I don't
know. What about when you go to the deli, you order a deli sandwich, the deli sandwich comes with a pickle. Is that so hot or so not?
So hot.
So hot. Pickle
Come
guy.
On.
We got a pickle guy.
I'm older than 19 years old. Of course I'm a pickle
guy. I think there's a lot of under 19s that like
okay.
pickles. Listeners, if you're under 19, you like pickles, drop us a line. Let us know.
Okay.
You're a hashtag picklehead. Quinns, what about saying the word lorry instead of saying the word truck? What do you think about that? Is that hot or so not?
That's neither. That's just who I am, and I can't change it, and I'm sorry.
I don't know. I'm kind of on team truck. Don't call okay. it an American bias. I just think it's a cool word.
I am gonna flag right here that I have to leave at 1:30 your time.
No problem. We got just 7 or 8 more of these
no.
so hot.
Can you
hot
stop? Food. I don't understand what this is. What this is?
It's
Where
a
did this
recurring
come from?
Segment we like to
no,
do.
No, it's not. We've never done this. Okay. I've checked out. Can we? Are you done?
What about role-playing sports? What about role-playing games where you play sports? What do you think, Quinn? So hot or so
Here's the
not?
Thing. The professional in me feels your high's pain and really wants to help to end this segment, but every time you give me a question, I do have to answer it. Role-playing sports? Pretty hot.
So hot. Okay.
Pretty good.
Okay.
So hot.
Okay.
Yeah. What about this recurring segment, so hot or so not? Is
can
it
you,
so hot or is it so not?
I'm going to abstain from
Okay. Can we
well,
stop?
That was so hot, so
Thank
not.
You.
Thanks for playing, Quinns. Let's take it to the main review, Yochai. Take it away.
I just don't know what that was. Okay. Gosh. All right. You completely.
I think what it was that Brad had to make us suffer before
yeah.
we made no. Brad suffer by forcing yeah. Brad to summarize this.
That's
module.
Very
look,
true.
Look, folks, at the end of the day, this is a show about games. I think it's fun to get a little games going. You know, we're playing games, you know?
All right, we're now going to review Silent Titans. So this is a book by Patrick Stewart. For those who aren't familiar, it's spelled Stuart, not the other British Patrick Stewart.
I've never once realized that that's a person with the name as another famous person. Wow.
You've never combined the two?
That's never thought that.
Okay. Anyhow, this wow. is by This is by Patrick Stewart. It is published by Swordfish Islands, aka Jacob Hurst. The layout is by Christian Kessler, and editing is by Fiona Maeve Geist. Together, they make up the Moonrat Conspiracy, who also did development on it. All of the art is by Dirk Detweiler Lechte, who we've we've reviewed a lot of his stuff on this podcast. And he also did all the maps, obviously. It comes in A4. It's printed by, I think, the same people who did Hot Springs Islands, the Friesens, I think they're called. And it has this kind of like beautiful end papers. It's foil stamped cover. It is a fancy, fancy thing. It's got a ribbon bookmark. It's got a separate bookmark with the rules on it. It is very fancy. It is, I guess, technically 4 Into the Odd, question mark. At least that's what it says. It has some interesting takes on that. So yeah, it was published in 2019, and we are going to review it today. It's a doozy of production here. So Brad, why don't you tell us a little bit about what Silent Titans is all about?
Okay, very easy to do, very easy to summarize. This is one of those easy games that you can just summarize really quickly. Yeah, so it's a game, it's a setting, it's a mega adventure. The gist of it is you're in a kind of modern England, in a sense, but it is a fantasy reality crashed out version of that, where in the past and present have collided into a very surreal world. There are swords, there are guns, there is incomprehensible horrors, there are cyborgs. And kind of the gist of it is that there are these titans. They're kind of like these futuristic, robot-esque god things in the vein of like cosmic horror, kind of Cthulhu-esque creatures. I wouldn't say they're like in the same like mythos, but I think in that same kind of incomprehensibly powerful and, you know, non-human entities. And they're kind of dead, kind of sleeping, and they all are also the world itself. You're walking over them. Sometimes you see their big, huge faces sticking out of the ground. And they are also dungeons, and you can go inside of them. And the reason you might want to do that is because their magical god brains are magical treasure. They are gold. And if you get them, one, you have a lot of money, and also you heal the broken world, because this is the kind of messed up world where if you follow a path for a while, it might not be the path where you go backwards and monsters are popping out to like grab you and fly up into the sky and kill you and replace you as a cyborg. It's that kind of world. So yeah, it's we also get small town. We get a city. There's some big factions. There's some wandering courts. So there's a lot of different moving pieces. And, yeah, you're kind of just navigating this total, reality crash nightmare and stealing God brains. Yeah.
Can I read two of my favorite quotes from this? But they're both really short, but they summarize the setting.
Yes, please.
In two very different styles that I think contains the like left brain and right brain of this book. It says, so describing the Titans, it says, "Those Titans of the future could not die, for they had not been born. They must wait and sleep, wait till waking when time would allow them to be. Wait and dream of worlds unborn, under the earth but not of it, sleeping just under the turf, oak roots tangled in their hair, bogs in their nostrils, rabbit warrens just beneath their fingernails." And then if you skip to the end into like tips for running it, it says, "In human turns, somebody beat the shit out of these giant robots," in bold. "They are comatose," and again in bold, "trying to wake up. If you can get into their brain and rip out their thoughts, you can stop this. Their thoughts are also money."
Perfect. That's very succinct.
I hate it so much.
I thought I hated this book. when I started reading it, because I was under instructions from Yahai to not Google it and not know what I was getting into. So I just got this beautiful hardback that you guys sent to me. I was so grateful. And then I started reading it, and it's got all this amazing prose. And then the moment I got to the after character creation, the first dungeon, which is like the story actually is kind of cool. It starts in media res,
yeah,
where you're in a staircase with like a twisting storm, like moving the walls around it. You don't realize it, but we can't spoil it actually. But what is it? Dr. Pig.
Dr. Hogg.
Yeah. Dr. Hogg is at the top of the staircase yelling at you. "You fools, my dementia bomb has wrecked your very minds. And that's the stuff. So you don't remember anything like a video game protagonist. Yeah. But like, I'm like, okay, cool. And then I got into reading the first kind of dungeon where you, as you're running around, running away, slash towards Dr. Hogg. And until I got into the groove of this adventure, I started to think, oh no, I fully hate this. Like, how did you two feel reading it?
Go first, Brad.
Man, it is. I find the setting very alluring. I like this world of broken gods. There are just so many like juicy poetic details. It is challenging. This is like really, really difficult to like figure out what really is going on. Just to crack this nut. Yeah, I mean, I kind of love it, but it's also makes me very angry in some parts. I mean, you know, it's passion. It's drawn passion from me. I don't know. I think I have read a lot of Patrick Stewart and I know kind of what I was getting into here. But yeah, I don't, I think if I tried to run this for my friends, they would like literally attack me. They would come at me.
I could not believe that Yahai said that you actually run
yes,
it, right?
Yes, I have. We'll get there.
But reading it, it was fun, and I like this a lot. I think this is a winner for me. Oh. Yahai, go ahead.
I just want to make sure, Quinns. Do you feel like? Well, we'll just get into it. We'll get this over with as quickly as possible so we can deep dive it. Mm-hmm. Okay, I.
It's that, isn't it? It's like, you're like, okay, let me tell you something I'm thinking about this book. And then like, I don't know, you turn to I really need to paint an image in the viewer's head that like, you turn to like the art that is beautiful. Yes. And like could not be better chosen by Dirk Duttweiler Lechte. It's all like Hieronymus Bosch illustrations, mm-hmm. You know, it's yeah. It's sort of like shadows that are platforms that are twisting in unnatural
angles. Yeah, slightly
angles,
less useful than Bosch, but yeah, agreed. It's yeah. Okay. There's a comic. Okay, there's a comic that I love. I love it. It's sort of. What's the appropriate way of saying it? It's schizophrenic in nature, and it is. Dynamic and beautiful, and I don't think it makes any sense, but it really I'm trying to think of a way without, maybe I should just say what the comic is called. Sorry, I go back and forth whether I should. I don't want to call anyone out, so you know what, I'm not going to do that. I'll just put it this way. This is a book that I have read three times, and I have run a substantial portion of with my own players when it first came out a couple of years ago. And a little background, I respect Patrick Stewart a lot. I read his blog, and I love Deep Carbon Observatory, and I really like some of his other stuff, some of his writing. If you just read his theory, like how to run a game, you know, he has a chapter called Making an Encounter, and another chapter in here called I don't remember what it's called, but it sort of pulls in from his blog, where it talks about how energy can be held, like held energy.
Oh, dude, that was one of the things I've highlighted in this, of like, oh, I am fully just taking that and putting it in other anything I run.
That he's written about on his blog before, and so much of it is just incredible. I mean, if you just took out the interview with Chris McDowell and the Making an Encounter section and gave that to someone who's getting into this kind of role playing, I think they'd be set. You know, it's really, really great. And I'm so glad that he can write clearly and accessibly part of the time. But my problem with this particular work is that it only gives you as much as you're willing to put in, which is kind of asking a lot for a 116-page hardback book that costs $50. Like, I feel like, yes, there are elements of, you know, Welsh and British history enmeshed in here that I think people will take away a lot from it. I for instance, love The Green Knight and appreciate some of the motifs here. I don't fully understand them, and it took me a while to kind of find all the threads. And I appreciate the almost gonzo nature of the setting, the animals with masks that make them sentient, and the robots who are also wizards and stuff. I think that stuff is really great. I find the usability abysmal. I would read entire pages, and are you ever reading late at night and then your brain starts to wander and you think about something personal and you realize you've read a page but you didn't read anything?
Yes.
That, yeah, 100%. That is how I felt the first time I read this and the second time.
Yeah.
I would.
It made me tired.
Yes.
Reading it.
Yeah.
It made me fully exhausted.
Right. And I think sometimes as a person, you just have to recognize when you're not smart enough, or when you don't have the educational background to maybe critically analyze something on the level everyone else seems to, or some people do. I felt that way a lot reading this. I just felt like I wasn't smart enough. And I'm not saying that to ask for some kind of, like, I'm not fishing for compliments. I legitimately think to fully grok this text, you need a background in literary analysis. And that part was really hard for me. I'm not saying it's a knock against the book. I'm saying it is a reality that this is a hard to pierce work of literature and art. Go ahead, Quinns.
I've worried. I've talked a bit too
much. No, you haven't.
No.
Yeah. You need to talk.
Again, just to clarify, I ultimately, even though I started reading it, was like, I loathe this. I came away from it being like, I love this. I'm really glad I own it. I probably won't run it, probably. But there are bits of it, like pieces of imagery, like, I don't know, the magpie maze and how that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where are we at with spoilers?
Well, why don't we? Yeah, we can just jump into it. Let's just deep dive for Silent Titans starting now.
Deep dive. Spoilers.
There. Just to be clear, there is stuff I love about it, and it did take three readings and playing it to really appreciate it. I think on its head, first, Brad, why don't you tell our listeners what this is really about?
I mean, I kind of did. I don't know.
Yeah, it's about exactly what it says. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You really are going into the skulls of ancient beings that exist outside now, of time to take the diamonds.
I guess one thing that we could mention that is a kind of a spoiler, and I think it's a challenging part of this book, is that, yes, as Quinns mentioned, you start without your memories. And as you go through this game, you see glimpses of the fact
that is cool.
Your characters have already been to these places. You've done this before and something happened. You were with this knight and you kind of start unraveling the story, which I think is, for me, a really cool concept, but also is very challenging with a role-playing game, especially when you have agency and it's a very lethal, dangerous game. Mm-hmm. When all your original characters have died, where does that leave these flashbacks? It's challenging. But you've got these crashing realities. I don't think it's a stretch to be like, oh, your new character is a new expression of your old character. It's the same person. Reality has merged. You went through a time machine dungeon or whatever, you know, like... I don't see that as a deal breaker.
So do you feel like that, and not to introduce too many terms here, but the gonzo nature of this setting, don't you feel like that undermines the principally lethal style of play that we're so accustomed to? Like, why do I care about my character if they're just going to die randomly through some misunderstanding of the game world? Because I can't see myself adequately expressing the consequences of actions, even if there's a lot of supplementary material for this. I don't know if you saw that, Quinns, but there are multiple third party guides, like from Technical Grimoire and Vagabond that just help you understand.
No,
yeah. There's like how to run the mousetrap and here's how you really need to think about
this. No. I did see everything you sent.
Right. Good, yes. good.
Which also unhelpfully, contains misprints. Like, and this is the thread I was going to pull up on, but you finish your point because I want to defend your intelligence.
I was just wondering if Brad felt like that kind of, well, it just, you know, it just works out fine. Like, we do that in role-playing all the time, but it's, the edges here are so they're so refined. I feel like I don't know when a character is being tried for a crime they did commit, or ending up in the pregnant body of a titan. That
right.
And there's a part where you literally are traveling through nightmares, and nothing you do matters. Like nothing you do matters. Maybe there's a will save here or there. Go ahead.
That is my favorite. That is my
favorite. You like title. The nightmares? Jeez Louise.
I like that one too. Yeah, so.
Okay, but. No, sorry.
Go ahead. I was going to summarize the nightmare dungeon, but if you. Yeah, please go on, Quinns, if you have a different point.
I don't want to lose control of a thread that you said, okay. Yochai, which is that when you said you were reading this, you're like, I just feel like I'm not smart enough for it. And I, as a critic, have. Like, so much of my job is to cut through that. And often when I speak to, you know, designers or artists, you know, you folks like creators, because I don't create, I just sit there in judgment. I'm awful. But you folks are willing to give the benefit of the doubts to things. And when I read this book as a journalist, I was just like, no, Yochai, it's unreadable because it's riddled with mistakes. Like, so my main thing in terms of the readability, and to me, the main thing that makes it such a, can I swear on this podcast?
Oh, let it rip, baby.
Yes, yes.
This makes it a fucking nightmare to read more than anything, especially coming out of reading Mothership modules, is every room, every NPC, every situation is presented as bullet points, which is exactly how Mothership does it.
Yeah.
You have cascading bullet points of like, here are the big things. When Mothership does it, that information is entirely prioritized of here's what you need to know first, here's what you see first. Right. If you walk into a room and the main thing is a dead body, it'll be like, you walk into the room, bam, dead body.
Yeah.
Here's what's on the dead body. You know, and then what this does is it takes those bullet points, and I swear to God, like the author has just punched them in at random, like almost as these ideas are coming to them.
Yes.
Which means that a room might be like fully underwater in black ink and full of squids.
Uh-huh.
But the first bullet point will be like, there's a book here.
Yeah.
And like you're reading and building this mental image of like, oh, there's a book and the book is a keyboard. And if you play the keyboard in this song, then a door opens.
Yeah.
And then you get to the fourth bullet point. It's like also the room is underwater and full of like tumorous pustules that are birthing invisible squids. And you're like, okay, you've taxed my brain so much because I built a mental image for this room and then had to rewrite it three times.
Right. And so, there is, we didn't speak on the layout much. Some of the layout is good. Like I like that they use color coding for the different titans, and the tables I think are pretty readable. The problem is, as you said, they don't nest bullets very much. So you'll just get literally a page of bullets, like one page of just one line bullets. I totally agree with that part. I actually was referring to the text itself. That you're right that there's a mental load in having to rewrite the room. That's a really great way of putting it. But there's also this problem where information is produced. So it'll say the acronym TAC. Okay.
Yeah.
that appears on page 49, but you don't actually see that defined until page 54. Now, helpfully in the PDF, I found you can actually click on things like that and it will take you to that page, sort of. But there is just no thought given to how human beings process information. And I don't know if that's just how Patrick writes or that's the decision of the layout team, but I felt very frustrated with reading. It's just endless bullets without giving you information in any kind of priority. So further down the page, you get, what is this thing? Then you get, what does it want? Then you get how to get away.
Yeah.
And that's even one of the better ones, to be clear.
My favorite example is that, like in the last four pages of the book, it's like, why should I care about these giant god crystals that we keep stealing? It's like the whole premise of the whole book, it's like isn't contextualized until the end. Last section of the book.
Right.
One of my favorite things, and the thing that I think ties it together is the town of Legion's Fort, which proves that like the artist is capable of drawing it doesn't have a standard vanishing point.
Right.
It is actually still quite weird, but it just looks like a kind of Roman town. And I really like that that's there because you go off, you have these absurd, insane adventures where like half your party probably die. And then you come back, and if you get a laser gun, you can sell it for like a bowl of beans and you know, get a hit point. Or you can hire, like there's a great list of people, you can hire, I don't know, the bastard Blelude, total oaf and social catastrophe. He costs 5 shillings and he has a musket. Great. But then also, like, yes, you, the, one of the Titans is essentially a war machine, and if you punch in what you think is a portal to these places, you can summon in basically an airstrike and wipe them off the map.
Yeah,
and it, you know that, like, I don't know. It's I all of which to say, I totally agree with your highest point that the Gonzo Nate, there it is. There, this book is two things. It's this like beautiful, stunning, kaleidoscopic array of fantastic ideas that you want to steal, packed into the format of a dungeon crawl or a series of dungeon crawls, like town, dungeon, which is, which to my mind would be like unplayable in the format that they've written it.
Well, let me tell you, you're correct.
Yeah. Okay. How did it go?
Well, yeah. Okay. So two things. I really do love the Into the Odd style character packages, which are basically you take the ability score and you map it to the hit protection so that they connect. Actually, they're called hit points in this because it's based on the earlier Into the Odd. But you get great little characters. So you don't build your own character. You get characters. I actually love when games do this, when they give you pre-gens. So, for instance, you might get, Philemon Fix has a Colt 45, a badge, and cuffs. Telepathy, if target fails, will save. Target feels its use. Psychic cop on the edge from a cyberpunk future, who could then be in a party with, Zephaniah Williams, who has a pickaxe and a Webley revolver and a smoke bomb, a coal miner, rabble-rouser, and a damned chartist. You just get this weird combination of different timelines and stories, or I should say time periods and stories. And I actually appreciate that a lot. I think it tells you a lot about the world. I think the world building itself, when you have distilled it to readable format, is actually really original and interesting. And there's something to be said about sentience and having, like, whether having a soul at all or having a sense of self is even a good thing. I think that stuff is beautiful. However, that does not make it a good game. You know, that does not make for a great game experience, in my opinion. So one thing I liked about this was, because the Titans are just essentially dungeons, you can kind of push the party to go certain ways if you want. So I had no interest in doing the pregnancy dungeon at all. Like, that is not a thing that I'm into. I have a real issue
I'm
with that.
I'm quite here.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm quite here for the pregnancy dungeon is my second
That's
favorite.
That's crazy. Whoa. That's crazy.
You say
to
so
me.
Hot.
That's crazy to me. God, Brad, come on, man.
I mean, it's to be clear, it's not, it's pregnancy is, there's one super bad pregnancy room. And,
yes.
But other than that, it is, and I say bad, it's like, if you do lines and veils with your players, and they're like, no, let's make, because ultimately I think the pregnancy room is, it's bad, it's unpleasant, but it's not less weird or less horrific than some of the fights and some of the things that happen to your character anywhere else. It's just very visceral.
Right. It's extremely visceral and gross. And if you're like me, where I just like can't handle that stuff, it was not fun for me. I do have, I think, players who would be more okay with it. If I had to choose a favorite one, I really like Brunin, the one who's it's got the most
the insect type. Yeah.
I feel like that one had the most foresty feel, whatever. And then
just like trees, dude. Come on.
I do just like trees, but I also like that each, it kind of made more sense to me.
Wait, hang on. The war machine full of
little
metallic
hives. Yeah, that didn't bother me at all.
And where you
no
open
problem.
Doors by picking a part of the overworld to annihilate.
Yeah, that's right.
This was your
that
favorite.
Was my favorite one.
This is foresty.
Yeah, it's got, yes, it's foresty to me because it's got the wood church. It's got the little hamlet and the ancient well. Yes, and insects to me feel right. I don't know how to explain it.
Are there not insects in a forest? That's
the
main thing.
No, you know what? This is fair. And it is I do just really like that structure of between the Titans, you go to just bucolic English suburbia.
Yes.
Then descend into hell.
Well, one of the biggest challenges is just mapping this out. It makes no goddamn sense. So when you're explaining to people, well, you can't go on the ocean because if you do, you'll be lost forever. That's fine. But then if you say you'll be lost forever unless you take the demon bone train to Bastion, which is where that's how they got there from. So, okay, back up. I ran this using an earlier version of Electric Bastion Land, and this made sense in the context of how I set up the Deep Country, which is like Bastion Land's sort of, this is anything that's not in the city is in the Deep Country. And as long as you look at each of the Titans as a dungeon that they don't know is a Titan, like they don't think about it that way. It's just a location that has a name, and that name has little hooks that are connected to the main town. It all actually works, but you have to do a lot of the work turning that into something completely usable. I wish that some of these player aids had been available to me after the fact, like the mousetrap one. I could not figure out. I just could not figure it out. The maze actually makes a lot of sense to me. That one I didn't have a problem with, and I really like the kind of encounters there. So I don't really know how to speak on it, because it's been a couple years since I ran it. It's been like 4 years, something like that. But we really struggled with making it make sense.
it's not designed to make sense. Like, that's almost, it's meant to be reality imploding in and of itself. But this takes me back to my central point that, like, it's based on a rule set that if we trace the DNA back, is still about going into dungeons, but it's about caring about hit points and it's about getting treasure.
Yep.
And that is such a weird box to put a story in that is about realities collapsing.
Yeah.
That feels like a cinema verite or like weird 1980s art house movie.
Yeah. I know what you mean. The character motivation to fix this broken world by, you know, looting these dungeons, that makes sense to me. Because you're trapped here. You can't really get a ticket to the demon bone train. Like, you're stuck in like this weird reality hell. But like the thing where it's like the brains are money. It's like, I hear that, but you're not really giving me anything to spend this money on. You know, it's like beans and swords. What else am I doing with this? That's my problem sometimes with these old school games that make assumptions that players want money, is that you give me all this money, but you don't show me what power is inherent in this money. You know, it's like, it's shiny, but like, how can I express that power? Like, what can I turn this into at the town? That I feel is kind of challenging, is like, what do I do when I bring these gems back to town? Like, how does that change? Like, what then?
And this is something I overwhelmingly felt reading this book. And what I think I talked about at the beginning of this, even before we went and started recording, is that, like, any given room in this dungeon, this is where it succeeds, is like supernaturally weird and funky and stinky and like nothing you've ever seen before. And that's the reason to buy this book and struggle through reading it. But you have this like unbelievably interesting like sort of writing with what is to me like the, like, how much of this book is roll a d6 to see what the players encounter, and by and large it will be something that wants to kill them. And like, I understand that in the OSR it's going to be, you know, like run away or negotiate with them, but like, there are so many things that want to kill you in this dungeon.
Yeah.
And like, why put that between your players and finding the next interesting thing? Mm-hmm. Am I sounding like completely unhinged to a couple of people who enjoy dungeons?
I tend to be on your end of this discussion when it comes to me and Brad, where I say I need more than money. I know that's what people in the OSR say. They need money as a motivating influence. And I agree with Brad that you need to show why that money helps them. I think ultimately, all of this kind of random stuff that wants to kill you, let's say that's not your preference. I do think there is some interesting character stuff going on. I think the mayor of sorts of the main town has...
He is so good.
Yes, yeah, it's great. Really great. It's really great. That was intelligible to me, and I understood where I could kind of, you know, when we started, that he was the guy the players met. It was that guy. And that all made sense. The problem is you then have random encounters that happen based on seemingly random events, which makes sense, but also it's so hard to place them in the kind of greater context of the campaign, because I don't feel like it, like the Titans are waking up, but they're not happening. There's nothing happening to make you feel like you need to go and do those things other than to get to gold. And yes, the world sucks, but my characters would respond by saying, well, we're going to investigate whatever we want. We're going to talk to this random guard and see if we can like live in his house. Like, they were less interested in doing the Titan stuff and more interested in just poking the edges of the game. And, and because the edges are so... I called them refined earlier, but I think that's incorrect. They're not drawn well enough for me. Their edges are too fine. if you don't run into them, you miss them entirely, especially because, and I'm just adding this in, I had no idea what was happening ever with respect to the maps. I just cannot use these maps, except for the town map, as Quinn's mentioned. The maps are just, what the hell is going on? Where is anyone? Yeah. If you read those useful kind of overviews, each dungeon would have a little overview. It doesn't help you at all. I don't know. Am I at the bottom of that thing that looks like a face? Where are the PC? You know, so you're kind of just, it's a whirlwind of art and a whirlwind of text and a whirlwind of presentation that honestly really taxes the mind. And I understand that there's some real genius at work here. I'm just not capable of appreciating it, I think. Not to hijack there. That's kind of my take on it.
Yeah. I think this is like, you know, ultimately this is a game about discovery. You know, it's like we get every room is interesting. And I think you get and then that in itself gets you to want to see what's next, what's beyond. I think the tension exists here in that so many of these rooms push back at you so forcefully. It's like finding that equilibrium, like, okay, I want to keep going, but like, but how, you know, and I do think for the right group, just that sense of discovery is going to keep them going all the way, especially the little tidbits about, oh, your characters have been here. I think that's really juicy meat on those bones for the right group. I think just the thrill of every room, every location is so – I think of this as like – it is so dense with good ideas. It's like every little bullet point is like this little Jolly Rancher, like yum, 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 right? Yep. But there's so many of them. It's like I have fallen into a grain silo full of Jolly Ranchers. And it is like, I might die here. But this is like, what a delicious death I'm experiencing here. It is, I think the challenge for me is fighting my way through this overwhelmingly dense stack of good ideas. And I think, go ahead, Quinns. What are you saying?
Oh, no, I hate that this is my first appearance on your podcast, but Yahai specifically was like, oh, let's make it special. I'll give you Silent Titans. But like this game more than like, I just think, give me this game and then take dudes, I'm so sorry for saying this sentence, but give me this game and take the OSR out. What would this game look like? Just thought experiment. Because I totally agree, every room is a Jolly Rancher.
Yeah.
Remove all of the monsters. Remove all of the loot. And just have it be this, like wherever there is, like, a monster stat block in this book, instead replace that with, like, descriptors of how to describe this room. Or for your high, just, like, where is it? Which the book absolutely does not tell you. Am I going up or down this staircase? I have the third hill, the gross body where you go inside a woman's body and that's the Titan. And it's one of the most disgusting things.
Oh, very much, yes.
There's like a valve that opens and you know you have to swim that way because it smells of beef. But I also have written down room number six, coma chamber. I read this chapter 3 times trying to figure out how to get to the coma chamber and I simply don't think you can.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is a way, but like my point is, if you just help me to navigate these great ideas rather than, yes, it's exactly what you say, Brad. It, instead, because dungeons have to make it hard to progress, you've given me a story with 100 amazing rooms where players have to fight tooth and nail to get from room to room rather than like, what if it would look like if it was just a story game of just pulling yourself from... Like, it could still have peril. But the number one thing in this book that I disagreed with is in that introduction, which is otherwise really, really great, is it says everything exists on a threat game slider.
Yeah.
The absence of a game makes it a dull military simulation. The absence of threats deactivates people's minds. And I disagree with both of those sentences. I think both of that is nonsense. That's my rant.
Interesting.
I had it.
No, I mean, that is interesting because, you know, I came from what I think we would call either, I don't know if this is, whatever. I came from a more story game background. And for a long time, I think I would have agreed with that. I have now realized what I care about more in play. And it does align itself, not necessarily with Patrick's specific guidelines, but it does hew closer to that. I do agree that the main problem I have with 99% of the stuff out there in the OSR is that my players who are smart and want to stay alive, they don't want to, they always ask, why continue? Why continue? And, yeah. and I think that's kind of, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, Quinns, but that is sort of the same thing is, why would I do this? Why would I go into a living mouth, you know, and for gold? Really? I feel like there's other things. In fact, if the main story was, hey, you got to wake up these titans or you got to stop, whatever. If you had factions that pushed you one way or the other and really wanted you to do sort of a Shadow of the Colossus style approach, I think you could get more out of it. But instead, you're right. You're these kind of ephemeral beings who may or may not exist. And many of the time, many times they go insane. Like, I just feel like there's a lot of, there's a lot of situations where I can imagine and have seen my players say, why?
Yeah.
You know,
There's a really amazing screenwriting tip, but you know how romance is a part of just about any movie. There is always a romance plotline that I always love, especially blockbuster movies. The reason for that isn't broad appeal. The reason for that is ultimately the stakes will at some point become so high in a movie that the only reason to proceed is love. And that is what is not present in Silent Time.
Love?
Like, the idea that... Like, you know, there's we're doing this for diamonds.
Right.
We're doing this for glory. We're doing this to fix the world. It's like, yeah, but there's no love in this.
Movie. Yeah.
There's a big woman you can climb into, but there's no classical femininity.
You know, now that you mention it, none of these dungeons have just, like, a freaky little guy hanging out in there that, you know, you just want to become friends with, right? You go in and it's nonstop, like you are in hell.
A squid is trying to impregnate you and something else is trying to drag your memories away. But that is why I like, just as long as I'm on this train, and I'll get off it. The reason I like the Nightmare Titan is because it ditches all of the obstacles that are in your way.
Yeah.
By, like, yes, it's a sequence of nightmares you have to wake up from, but what the Nightmare Dungeon structure, which is like okay, so it starts with room one. You wake up. All the players, when you enter this Titan, all the players wake up. And they are in, it says here, your arm stings, you've just been injected, you're all in robes, pajamas, wheelchairs with plastic tags.
Yeah.
And a doctor says, I'm glad to see you with us today. And then you, the GM, address the players by their name, not the player character's name.
Yeah.
And the way the players get through this dungeon is by when you say, so tell me about this, quote, character of yours. And the players have to be like, oh, let's flip back. It's like, well, I'm Cato Clovius Cato. I'm a Roman legionnaire. And someone else is like, I'm Sir Colgrin Cador the Pure, and I'm an ape. Like, if you go with the GM, then you get into the next nightmare room.
Yeah.
But the reason I like the structure of this nightmare dungeon is it's mostly just conversational. And the players will naturally sluice from room to room just by playing the game it wants you to play, rather than the game pushing you back out of the...
Yeah.
Of the time.
I think that's a smart... I mean, it totally upends the game. It's a totally different method of navigation. And it's interesting, too, because there are... You pick up, like, themes about how to proceed the right way. You know what I mean? There are clues you can
pick up. Which is like rolling over, basically.
Yes.
And just doing exactly what the nightmare wants you to do.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how you get deeper, is just, like, accepting your terrible situation. But I don't know. I will push back a little bit. I do think there is some value in, like, having a traditional OSR structure on some of these dungeons. In that, I do think they're a little they're a little askew as far as challenges. I don't think I think a good dungeon has a pace, and that is, you know, it's like push, rest, you know, and these are overwhelmingly pushing back at you. I like the idea of to delve deeper is something that taxes resources and can require planning. Like, sometimes you get to the final, like, brain room, and it's like the crystal is at this inaccessible place. And it's like, we can't get here. We have to come up with a plan, like, get some rope and hire some people and, like, buy a fire truck or whatever. you know, and I think that's kind of how these are meant to be tackled, isn't that, like, this isn't Legend of Zelda where you enter the dungeon and you have to solve the puzzles to complete them. It's like some of these are kind of these macro challenges where you have to go back to town and the campaign is thinking about how to get deeper into this hellhole. But I do think, like, just the density of challenges seems to kind of antagonize that kind of decision making. It's like, I don't want to go back, guys. That's way too dangerous. There's too many cyborgs, you know.
I want to tie this into the point that Yohai made, because I do agree with what you're saying. I don't think that this structure of dungeon, like, I love the Roman Legionnaire town with the messed up mayor.
Yeah.
There's a reason the mayor is one of the few NPCs that gets a double page spread in more details.
He's so good.
Because there's the implication that you're going to meet him over and over again, and he's awful every time. and you have his entire, like, day planner of what he gets up to every day, which is hilarious. But when Yohai said earlier that when he was playing the game, it's like, just give me a map, dude. This game doesn't even have a map. Uh-huh. My feel reading Silent Titans is, okay, if you're going to make this a dungeon that players are expected to push through, then make it quasi-balanced. Don't make this a dungeon that's like, oh, it's full of what it is currently, I think, and the thing that we're all feeling is it is full of so much wonderful stuff. Uh-huh. And the authorial tone is like, I'm going to ride a monster with, you know, that sucks your brain out and has 40 HP and you can't run away just because. Right. And it's like, which is it? Do you want us to see all the cool stuff in the dungeon? Or do you want us to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, very true.
I feel very scared that we have officially chased Quinn's off from the OSR forever with this, which is what I was worried about.
No.
Because this is not,
no.
There are some other ones I can recommend.
No, it's
no, dude. I've read like Incandescent Grottoes, like I said before this call. I'm here for you know, like I love so much of what the OSR does. I just think this book is like two legs straddling a chasm, and it's straddling two worlds.
Yeah.
It's straddling a glorious inventive art house story game,
right.
But it wants to deliver it in the format of a really careless killer dungeon.
Yeah,
okay, and I don't think you can do both.
So it's like the reward is the each progressive shitty situation. It's like, you've been rewarded with a cool new idea, which wants to kill you.
Yeah,
it's never like, you're the hero, you get a parade now, here's a girlfriend character. It's never like that. It is always like, you're rewarded with more cool looking nightmares.
Well, so if I could, since we're probably, you know, nearing the end of this review, I just wanted to touch on two things. I do think the Nmedia Res opener works really well. I wish that you understood it wasn't on the map, because when I ran it, I could not figure out where it was in relation to everything else, which is, again, because there is no map other than the town map. There's kind of a page that shows you things, but you have no idea how they interact.
That's kind of the point, though, is like, this world, it can't really be mapped, right?
Oh, I understand. I understand, but it's also a game and exists in human space. And, you know, I would appreciate just even a point crawl kind of thing that doesn't have to really have distance, but it can have relational, like, you know, the fact is I was looking for it, you know? So, okay, put that aside. Well, the thing that I think also works really well is the maze and Urizen, the prismatic demon. I actually really liked that in play. It was a great kind of antagonist. And also, I completely missed all the Gawain references, like the shield. And I remember guessing that this had to do with the Green Knight when there's a mention of a sash, the green sash and Gawain stuff. Like, I remember thinking, oh yeah, and then not thinking about it again until later when Patrick had some Kickstarter to translate Gawain and the Green Knight or something, or illustrate it. Then I thought, oh yeah, this guy's really into it. But what I found out later was that he actually meant to include a memory that you get if you actually get the shield from the demon, a memory that, I'm just going to read really quick because it relates to everything else. So if you get the shield from the demon and you see the image of
like
Mary on the
inside, this is like a bit of apocrypha here. This is stricken from the official book.
Yeah, okay. Yes. This was not in the book, but he released it later. And this is what he wrote. The creation of Silent Titans had quite a lot of challenges to it. One somewhat regrettable, although curiously appropriate, aspect is that this memory is missing. If the PCs defeat the prismatic demon and recover the pentangle shield, the following takes place. This is the shield. So, okay. Seeing the image of Mary on its inside will suddenly trigger a complex memory. This is the shield of Gawain. Together, you defeated Dr. Hogg and sent the Titans asleep. You tricked a false and cruel knight into attacking the core of the Titan Burke. This is the body floating in Burke's final chamber. This allowed Dr. Hogg to think Gawain was dead, and that caused him to reveal his final plan to raise Kronos from the Afan Mor. The last thing you remember of Gawain was that he sought the Green Chapel. So even the part that makes things make somewhat more sense was taken out of the book.
I had a similar thing with the pamphlet that's like miniatures. that I found so... we haven't talked about this at all. This is like...
The paper minis.
The paper minis are wild. So
I have them in...
I have them right in front of me right here. This is an amazing thing where the book comes with like about, oh God, must be like 40 or 60 little postcards that are all double-sided. Each postcard has like four or five little weird people on it. Sometimes they look like matchbox cars. Sometimes they look like skeletons turned inside out. Sometimes they turn like, they look like a marching band that's just like cursed with, I don't know. But you can cut them up and you can cut out like a little face here to use it as a miniature. You can fold them up. It gives you all these recommendations for how to fold them up in different ways to represent big enemies. But it also says here, to squeeze maximum content into these 60 pages, everything's double-sided. Regarding the pieces for the Maze of Glass Rooks, brackets, page 1516, this reversibility has a specific function. The front side represents the creatures as seen from afar, and on the back, their hidden nature to be revealed on close encounter. So sure enough, these are postcards that you cut out, and then one side of the postcard shows, like, all these weird little tiny people from the class mage. And then as you flip it over, you see how they're, like, up close. So, like, what looks like wolves are, in fact, Victorian orphans wearing wolf masks. What look like monks are, in fact, monkeys wearing nuns' robes. Except they have messed up the printing. So that one of them, if you look at it, like, so two of those aren't flippable.
No.
They, in fact, show the close-up of something else. And I was driven nuts because everything about Silent Titans makes me feel like I'm being an idiot. When actually, I think the book contains all kinds of errors that are unnoticeable because the book is this like hallucinatory, psychedelic nonsense that uses really long and a lot of the time old-fashioned words.
What a book! What a beautiful book, though, right?
It's gorgeous, and like I feel like I've complained so much on this podcast, and that sucks because every single page I have written down in pencil something to steal for other RPGs.
Yeah,
I am head over heels in love with like one of the nightmares you wake up in is an art gallery full of exhibits, and all of the exhibits are like, it says here, cruel, ironic mockeries of the adventure. So like you might have a collage that's of you and your friends doing something heroic you did last session, but it's made of trash and art critics are making fun of it. Or like, you know, a pseudo commercial, you replay something from the campaign like a perfume advert. Like it's so fucking good. It's just, I God damn it. This book pulls me in so many different directions, you two.
Totally. I've had this PDF for years and I bought the hard copy here for this review, and man, and like having the actual book is like, it just pulls me in. I just want to pick it up all the time. It's so gorgeous looking. It makes me want to interact with it.
I'm impressed that the rules to Into the Odd were put on one bookmark.
I love that. The rules of the book are on a bookmark. It's amazing.
I will say, so I didn't, I ordered the paper minis later. I backed the Kickstarter and then I didn't add the paper minis. And then much later I thought, you know what? I should get the paper minis. But then I ended up playing it play by post. So it didn't matter. What I do enjoy is that there's a separate book, a separate PDF, 17 megabyte PDF just for the maps. Who can use the maps? What scenario are you using the map PDF? Like I didn't use it. It did. I literally, my play by post for this has no images. Just what do they serve? Who are they going to tell you? You know,
dude. But the art is so slamming. I think this is like the best I've ever seen Dirk's art look, and I think it's perfect for like, you know, Dirk's maps should be non-literal. You know, they should be.
I don't know. I'm
abstractions.
Over it.
I think it's great.
We've done. This is our third book illustrated by Dirk, at least. And
yeah, I'm a Dirk head.
The thread. I think his writing is great. And I think he's a really great artist. But I find his maps completely unusable.
Nah, more Dirk. More Dirk.
All right. Anyhow,
give me that Dirk. That's what I say.
Look, I actually appreciate your candor, and I think it's really important, Quinns, that you are, as a critic, able to say these things. Because I feel like, am I just missing something? I've ran this. I've read it three times. How am I not getting it? And now I feel like maybe I am getting it. It just doesn't work for me. I don't have, you know, a dog in this fight. It's not like I like Patrick Stewart. I think he's really smart. I also think he's frequently... kind of speaking, uh, he 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 is himself. Okay, he got really drunk once and reviewed Electric Bastionland on Twitter, and it's one of my favorite RPG stories ever. It's really funny. It's just tweet after tweet of him saying, like, the art is very millennial American, but the book is so British. You know, he's got, it's just really funny. I think he gets it. I think he understands what this is. I just wish it was more usable for, you know, people like me. So that's my final say on it. I appreciate so much that you're willing to put in your time, Quinns, because this is a big ask for Heathcliff
to
review.
I love that you chose this to have me on. And to clarify, I didn't realize that, of course, because I own Veins of the Earth. So I am a fan of Patrick Stewart's work. And I think
that's the only book that's more difficult. But
Veins of the Earth, I think, to me, functions
it's
because
good.
I can flick through. If my players go underground, I can flick through
it, get
to something weird and be like, I'm using this. Silent Titans is not usable in the same way. And if
I'm curious what you'd think about Deep Carbon Observatory.
This is maybe my takeaway for your audience is I want to read Deep Carbon Observatory after reading Silent Titans. So clearly I didn't have a bad time.
So originally DCO was in my opinion, it's just all text. It did not have good maps and it did not have good art. Then he re-released it with like brand new maps and new art. And it's now very beautiful. And in my opinion, much easier to run. I ran the original, not the new one, but I've looked through the new version. So yeah, definitely go for the new one. But I'm glad because I find it to be much more approachable than, well, whatever this is. So as a
professional reviewer, are you guys ready for my two line review of Silent Titans?
Yeah.
So something
yeah.
I come back to with my work a lot, especially to my YouTube work, is that, and I've said this for quite literally 20 years, good work is done by talented people having fun together. And after reading Silent Titans, I might have to rescind that statement because I think Silent Titans is an example of some of the most unbelievably talented people I've ever been exposed to having maybe too much fun.
Whoa. That is good. Okay.
That's a Mamma Mia right there.
That's it. Oh, no, don't with the Mamma Mias. All right. Well, before we switch off, Quinns, do you want to talk about where folks can find you and what you've got upcoming and that
sort
of thing?
Sure. It's very simple. If you like or ever watch YouTube, or even if you don't, hey, try YouTube. It's really cool. On YouTube, I have a YouTube channel called Quinns Quest, where I am aiming to do the highest caliber, or certainly the longest, or certainly featuring the most bad 80s suits of RPG reviews that are around. I love TTRPGs and I'm here and I'm going to be reviewing them for years. Or if you like documentaries about games and play and weird subsections of gaming as a culture, you can check out my work on People Make Games.
And real quick, you have a Patreon where people get extra stuff. And I almost joined for one video in particular. You were going to talk about alternatives to dice.
Oh, how to roll dice properly. Yeah. No, look, but you know what? You don't need to. Yes. Every video that I release on the YouTube channel publicly, every review, I didn't want to paywall any reviews because those reviews can make such a difference in a designer or a publisher's life. But I will paywall me just talking inanely about RPGs. And so for every review that goes out on Quinns Quest, if you pay $4 a month for the Patreon, you will get a whole other review of me talking about things like how I prep for sessions or why you've been rolling dice wrong.
Right. So I don't remember what it was. It was part of that video that really struck me. And I will see, maybe I should join, but, we are so grateful to have you on and, very much looking forward to what you review next. I think folks, I know that you said, you know, Wild Sea was a big product and so was Lancer. A lot of people in the 5th edition world and in the OSR don't know anything about that stuff. So I'm excited to see what you highlight next. And yeah, it might be something I've heard of, but I probably haven't spent that much time thinking about. So I'm just really looking forward to your channel and I wish you all the best.
I'll take it. Thank you too so much. I am such a big fan of this podcast. It's such an honor to be on. You do have such wonderful patter and I really do, like, even if I'm not sending my players into dungeons, I absolutely love hearing you two talk about them. So cheers.
Talk about it. Okay, thank you. All right, well, this has been Between Two Cairns. You can find us at betweentwocairns@gmail.com or our Patreon, which is patreon.com/betweentwocairns. We don't keep anything behind a paywall, but if you do support the show, we will potentially send you some stickers in the mail. Brad, we're up to 25 that you need.
I gotta send some stickers. Wow. Not
just stickers, illustrations, because Brad will send you a boutique, bespoke, Druck doing something offensive on an index card.
Not
in the mail.
No.
It's offensive to some. There's a lot of nipples involved. Anyhow,
nothing offensive about nipples, man.
That's
true. You're in a prison of your own insecurities if you think nipples are offensive.
There are some pretty offensive nipples in Clementine's, can I just say?
Yes. All right. Well, anyhow, thanks so much for listening. We actually don't know what we're reviewing next week.
Thanks. Thanks for listening, y'all. We appreciate it. And as a final thought, you know, I'm not some people around here are going to tell you your nipples are offensive and you should cover them up. I think bodies are cool, all right? Big bodies, little bodies, doesn't matter. You're living in a prison of your own flesh, but guess what, buddy? It's a beautiful golden temple. Treasure it. Let the nipples out if you want to. But if you don't, that's cool too. You know, at the end of the day, we are all driving our own spaceships through this thing called life. I think we can all agree to that. And I'm here to salute you and say good luck. This podcast applauds you and what you do. Yes, we love you. Yes, thank you, Quinns.
Thank you, Brad.
We got a few more so hots or so nots here real quick for you.
Don't
Quinns,
let him go.
Wearing shorts hot, so hot,
it's,
or so not.
Okay,
it's
stop.
So hot. It's
stop.
So hot. Okay, can we get that?
No, Quinns, don't answer anymore. Goodbye. Thank you. Bye, everyone.